Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'What shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses.' So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, 'How much do you owe, my master?' 800 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 400. Then he asked the second, 'And how much do you owe?' 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, 'Take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than they are with people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you for the reading, Helen. That was very nicely read, thank you. Did everyone see me okay? Thankfully I'm quite tall, so I don't need to stand up on the stage there. Now, 4 weeks ago, I spoke about being called by God. I don't know if people were here. It was the call of Jeremiah. And I said that God knew us, before we were born. Even before our parents or our grandparents were born. And he has a plan and a purpose for our lives. And our goal should be to tap into that, to do what he leads us to do. So today's talk could be seen as a follow-up to last time, because it's about serving God. This could prove to be a little unpalatable for some, and certainly challenging for all of us. How does it work out in practice? And the talk also involves a subject dear to many people's heart: money. The passage that we've been given starts with one of the strangest parables ever told by Jesus. You could even say it's a notorious one, because it's the parable of the shrewd manager, or some versions say the dishonest manager. How could Jesus use such a dishonest man as an example for his disciples? Very strange. When I first read it, it appeared to me that Jesus was actually commending the shrewd manager to his disciples, recommending that they behave in a dishonest way just like he was. Well, of course, he wasn't saying that at all, but on first reading, it can seem like that. What we need to remember is that Jesus is speaking to his followers and to the Pharisees, because that's stated in verse 14, which we didn't read this morning, which says the Pharisees who love money heard all this and so on. So the parable is for the benefit of disciples, but also pointedly criticizing the Pharisees who loved the riches that came with the position. And this parable serves as a bridge between the two stories of the prodigal son, which we heard about last week, and the rich man and Lazarus, which follows on. So it's a bridge between the two. Now, in this story, the manager and his master are both unsavory characters. What we need to understand is that a wealthy landowner, such as the master, in those days would have given stewardship of his land to a man who promised him the highest income. An example for today might be the East Coast Main Line train service. Okay? The government gives the franchise to an organisation that will give it the most money, and then that organisation tries to charge fares to make that money plus a bit extra for itself. And that's not dishonest, that's the way it works. And it's the same sort of principle here. The landowner has land, he gives it to the steward to manage, the manager gets the money for his master, but also some for himself. Now, it's probable that the manager in this instance was trying to squeeze too much out of the estate. So that's the picture we have that Jesus is telling. He's taking too much for himself. In changing the bills of those who owed money, he was probably just wiping off the extra profit that would have lined his own pockets. So note here that the manager doesn't repent like the prodigal son does. That was the prodigal son parable. And he's not virtuous like Lazarus, which is the next parable that comes up. But he is doing something to try and put things right in his own way. So one of the strangest aspects of this story is that the master commends the steward for what he does. Strange, yeah? Seems that both the master and the steward actually valued the same thing, shrewdness, especially in the matters of business. After all, you don't actually condone something or someone for something that you disdain. Perhaps the expression, "it takes one to know one," is appropriate here. The master could recognize and appreciate the shrewdness of the manager because he valued it and practiced it himself. He probably would have done the same thing in that position. Faced with ruin, the manager took energetic action to ward it off. He was, as Jesus puts it, a man of this world, or if you're reading an older version, a son of the age. Now, one thing we must understand here is that Jesus is definitely not telling his disciples to act dishonestly. Remember, he's talking not only to his followers, but also to the Pharisees, the lovers of money, the lovers of possession, the lovers of position. The Bible never teaches us to act like the world. Quite the opposite. And what Jesus is saying here is that both men in the story typify the values and conduct of an unbelieving generation. Jesus spends much of the parable telling us about the steward because that is the way that those who are worldly act. The Pharisees were shrewd in making money, and they were also proud of it. It must have come as quite a shock to them when Jesus characterized shrewdness as being evil. And I've highlighted the fact that it's the dishonest manager. The Pharisees might have been thinking, yeah, this is the way you put things right. So no wonder they got upset at his teaching. If we as Christians are to put off worldliness, in other words, worldly ways of thinking and acting, then we must be clear on what worldliness is. Jesus here is teaching by contrast, and you often find that in the way Jesus teaches. In fact, any Jewish sage at the time, any rabbi, would teach by contrast. And what he's doing in this parable is showing us what we are not to be like. Now, at this point, I was going to read from the Message, and in fact, I put it up there, but I'm actually going to not do that. Because when you're serving God, sometimes you have to be prepared to change things. And this morning, my wife Heather said, you know, if you're talking about being shrewd, you should probably read this. It's from her daily Bible reading yesterday. And I've learned over the years that if God is showing somebody something, quite often things keep coming up through the preceding days, weeks maybe, that he wants us to share. And this story is about shrewdness, but it's not the worldly shrewdness that we're looking at in the parable that Jesus told. It's the kind of shrewdness that Jesus wants us to have. An Indian farmer had crippling debts to the unscrupulous old village moneylender. The latter agreed to forgo all debts if he was allowed to marry the farmer's beautiful young daughter. She and her father were horrified at the prospect, but they seemed to have no options left. The moneylender suggested they let Providence decide the matter. He would put two pebbles in a bag, one black, one white, and whichever she picked out would decide her fate. The white one would mean debt was released unconditionally. The black one would mean marriage. If she refused to pick a pebble at all, her father would be thrown into jail until the debt was paid. So the moneylender picked up two pebbles off the path, but the daughter noticed they were both black. She was stuck. If she refused to take a pebble, her father would be thrown into jail. If she picked up a pebble, it meant sacrificing herself for her father's debt and imprisonment. If she pulled both out and exposed the man as a cheat, she and her father would be victim to his spiteful vengeance. What could she possibly do? She had her head firmly screwed on. She took a pebble out of the bag, but accidentally dropped it and let it fall to the ground where there were lots of pebbles, and it got lost. Then she apologized. "Oh, how clumsy of me! But never mind, if you look in the bag for the one that's left, you know which one I took out." Since the remaining pebble was black, it would have to be assumed that she had picked the white one. The moneylender couldn't admit his dishonesty, and thanks to her shrewdness, she and her father were free. Shrewdness is a quality we don't always aspire to, but Jesus endorses it fully. Coupled with innocence, it makes the perfect combination. And the verse that this passage was talking about is, "I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves." And that's the difference. That's the contrast between the shrewdness of this world and the shrewdness that God wants us to have. We are stewards. We are managers, just as the manager in the story was. And we're given certain resources by God for a time. How do we use those resources? I'm talking about our money, our skills, our possessions, our time. Money and possessions will not last forever. We come into this world with nothing and we leave this world with nothing. What really matters are relationships. In verse 8, Jesus says that the people of this world, in other words, unbelievers, are wiser in the things of this world than the people of the light, believers, than the people of the light are about the things of the world to come. If we pursued the kingdom of God with the same energy and commitment that the children of this world pursue profit, we would live in an entirely different world. We should use what we have to manifest Christ to the people that we meet, to evangelize them, even using words if necessary. We should be investing in people's souls, because this sort of investment is everlasting. A faithful steward gains, but not at the expense of others. A faithful steward is obedient and honoring to God, and pursues the best interests of their fellow men or women. And in this way, everybody wins. In verse 9, Jesus is talking about heaven. And he's speaking to a materialistic audience. But notice he doesn't describe heaven as a place where the streets are paved with gold, but rather as a place where our friends will be. One of the blessings of heaven will not be the streets of gold, but the people who are there, especially if we used our resources to win men and women to Christ. He says the same sort of thing in his Sermon on the Mount, where he asks his followers to lay up treasures in heaven. There's a verse in a song that some of you might recognize. It goes like this: "Money, so they say, is the root of all evil today. It's difficult to say that without actually singing it, but anyway. And it sounds like a quote from the Bible, but it's not. What the Bible actually says is the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Now, I highly recommend that you have money. It's very useful stuff. In fact, it's pretty difficult to get by without it. And it's a necessary part of life. And it's not intrinsically bad or good. It's one of the many things in life that the Lord owns but allows us to be stewards of. And Jesus talks a lot about money. Do you know, quite often when somebody stands at the front and talks about money, they then send round the collection basket. But when you read through the Bible, you'll notice that Jesus never does that. Jesus taught us that money has its proper use, but that people's attitude to it can be dangerous. He condemned the greed that leads to corruption, that leads to damaged family relationships, that leads to injustice. And he understood that it's natural to be concerned about having a roof over your head and food on the table and clothes to wear, but he encouraged his followers to give priority to God's way, serving God. God's ways are not man's ways. Serving God will cause us to live lives distinctly from that of unbelievers, to give up our commitment to economic security. We should use our material possessions very differently, so that we lay up treasures in heaven rather than here on earth. And that is sheer foolishness. Can you be foolish? Can I? Don't answer that. Should we be shrewd, or should we be stupid, at least as far as the people of this world are concerned? How wise is it to give away your possessions, to not pursue wealth but God, to sell stuff rather than save it, to loan money to people who you know will never be able to pay you back? In all honesty, we can't obey the Lord's teachings and commands concerning money without looking stupid. In Acts, we see the early Christian community living as one, sharing all things in common, distributing to all who had need. That's how we should be living. Jesus told us, "Do not gather and store for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust and worm consume and destroy, and where thieves break through and steal, but store for yourselves treasures in heaven." And he also said we should guard ourselves from all covetousness and immoderate desire for wealth, the greedy longing to have more. The underlying spiritual danger associated with money and possessions is that they may easily become our idols. Now, it's possible to have money and to have God. But it's not possible to be a lover of money and to love God. And one of the most difficult talks I've ever given was on the commandment that Jesus gave to love the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, because it seemed such an impossible commandment. And so with many things, it all boils down to love. Love God. Love your neighbor. Because if we do this, it will be natural to have compassion on the people we come in contact with, to give to them, and to share with them. And as the Apostle John puts it, if anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Are you serving God, or are you serving money, mammon, however you like to put it? How do you know who you are serving? A couple of weeks ago, the Reverend Bishop-elect Mark Tanner was preaching here, and he asked, "Who or what would you be willing to die for? And he gave the example of parents who often make sacrifices for their children. And if you want to know who you're serving, he said, remember that you will sacrifice for your God. So are you sacrificing for money? Or are you sacrificing for God? Henry Fielding, a famous novelist, once said, if you make money your God, it will plague you like the devil. Paul Getty, a billionaire, said, I hate and regret the failure of my marriages. I would gladly give all my millions for just one lasting marital success. They were rich people who came to realize that money is not the God that gives. It just takes. David Rubenstein, an American financier and philanthropist, is quoted as saying, what do most people say on their deathbed? I love that cartoon. They certainly don't say, I wish I'd spent more time on the internet. And they don't say, I wish I'd made more money. What they often say is, I wish I'd spent more time with my family and done more for society or my community. And there must be countless of examples of rich people on their deathbed saying how they regret chasing after money and not spending more time with their families and friends. Now, there's a palliative nurse called Bronnie Ware from Australia who spent many years caring for patients in the last 12 weeks of their lives. And she wrote a blog about her observations of the top five regrets of the dying. And that was later turned into a book. Top of the list was the wish that they had been true to themselves rather than trying to please others. Second, and this was mainly for men, was, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. And apparently, they expressed this desire, they'd missed their children's youth. They missed their partner's companionship. They spent too much time on the treadmill of a work existence. Only when they were at life's end did they realize that they could easily have got by on much less and enjoyed life much more. For some of us, and I include myself here, this is a tough lesson to learn. But please, let's not learn it too late. She ends her book by saying that life is a choice. It's your life. Choose consciously, choose wisely, and choose honestly. James put it very well 3 weeks ago when he said that we can choose to drink either from a spring of pure water or out of a cracked cistern. And he had some slides up which showed that. The cracked cistern, of course, is of this world. The spring is from God. We have a choice where we drink from. God has given us everything. The Reverend David Williamson last week put it like this. He said, God is a recklessly extravagant father who has spent everything on us, even to the point of giving us his son. Do you ever see those adverts that say, buy this because you're worth it? Yeah. They're trying to sell you something, of course. God gave his son because he thinks we're worth it. Doesn't that just hit you? So if God is our master, if we're following God, then our wealth, our possessions, our talents, and our time will be at his disposal. Because after all, they are his. We're simply custodians of them. We're managers of them. So who will you serve? God or money? It's not such an easy question to answer. Choose wisely.